This episode is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.
Hello, you are tuned into Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Musqueam people at UBC. My name is Aliyah Mary, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Gurman Gill. Each week on Research Review, we interview a researcher who is affiliated with the UBC community and discuss some of their latest work and findings and how they relate to broader issues in society. Today, I'd like to welcome Dr. Lisa Holsey to Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM. Dr. Holsey is an associate professor in the Department of Occupational Science and Occupational Therapy in UBC's Faculty of Medicine, and is also affiliated with BC Children's Hospital Research Institute. She is the lead developer of the Calmer medical device, designed to be used in the NICU in hospitals. So to start off, Gurman, would you like to ask some questions?
Yeah, it seems like you worked a lot in a clinical setting before becoming a professor. Maybe could you start by telling us a bit about yourself, your educational path, and what you studied, and how you got to your career right now?
So I was trained here at UBC in both physio and occupational therapy, and then started work in pediatrics right after I graduated and worked at Children's Hospital here in Vancouver. And I worked in the neonatal intensive care nursery doing clinical care. And I also worked in a program that followed the children's development as they grew, called the neonatal follow-up program. And I did that work for about 17 years, so almost 20 years, and literally had a parking lot conversation with one of my colleagues who had received a large grant, and she needed somebody to do a part of the research. And I said, oh, that sounds really interesting. And she said, and I was just back from a holiday, so I was really vulnerable at the moment. And she says, well, if you're going to do the work, why don't you do a PhD while you're at it? And I said, sure. So I already had a master's degree that I had done during the nighttime before that, and while I was working full time. And then 2 weeks later, I found myself applying for interdisciplinary studies at UBC. So I did a PhD at UBC. I'm a homegrown girl here. And after that, was able to get a postdoctoral fellowship at UBC, and then was on faculty in the OSOT department. So really what's happened is I've taken my clinical work, got myself educated, and now I'm doing research in the area where I was a clinician. So it's kind of just a changing of roles, but it's in the same area of clinical practice that I worked in for a long time.
That's pretty nice. And just one question I had. So you said you mentioned you got your PhD at UBC. Did you do your undergraduate and master's at UBC as well?
I did. And I had advice that, you know, if you're going to do a postdoctoral fellowship after, you should travel someplace. Wasn't going to happen because of family circumstances. And I got what I ended up doing was having a postdoc fellowship in Vancouver. But the supervisor who I worked with had just moved from Montreal. So it was with someone who was doing different techniques. So I actually did learn a bunch of new stuff, which is part of the purpose of doing a postdoc. And so the timing of his arrival and my needing a postdoc actually meshed really well. And so I was able to stay here for my family. And and it's worked out. So a little bit of out of the box, but it's been great.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. It sounds like you know quite a bit about the NICU. Could you tell us a bit maybe about what the environment's like and how the Calmer robot sort of fits into that environment?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, the NICU environment is not one that most of the public know much about. It is an intensive care setting. And so it is, it's got lots of very expensive, fancy equipment. But I would say that at the new hospital on Oak Street, where the unit is now, it's a much more family friendly place than the old hospital, because each family has their own room and they can stay in the room with the baby as long as they would like, day in and day out. There's fridges available, they can put food in. There's a television. We had lots of televisions donated by TELUS. So family members can be in there. Of course, that's not we can't have lots of people in because of COVID, but before COVID, we would have, you know, whoever wanted to visit could visit. And, but the overwhelming feeling of it is that it is a place that is highly specialized, lots of equipment. So it can be quite daunting for families. And of course they're having an event they didn't anticipate most of the time.
So one question I just have to clarify, the NIC or NICU, as it's apparently called, what does that acronym basically stand for?
It's Neonatal Intensive Care Unit.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. And who usually goes to the Neonatal Intensive Care Unit? Does everyone go there, or is it special circumstances?
Yeah, it's babies who require, so at the BC Women's Hospital, the infants who would be admitted would be those who are very premature and they need advanced medical care to maintain life. They could also be babies who are full term who have a variety of different conditions as well. So they have admissions between 600 and 800 babies a year from around the province. And there are other NICUs in the province as well. So if you can stay in Prince, let's say in Surrey, you can go to the NICU there. There's one in Victoria. So it's not the thing that's different about the women's unit in particular is that it's the most advanced level of care. So if you're very have a critically ill premature baby who was say born a few months early and they might need surgery and things like that, then they would come to BC Women's Hospital and be cared for there.
Excellent.
Can you tell us about the Calmer robot and sort of how it works in that environment in the NICU with all that fancy equipment?
Yeah, sorry, I forgot about that question. Thanks for bringing me back to it. So the Calmer, there's some debate about whether it's actually a robot. And so I'm going to call it a medical device because if you're a specialist who does robotics, like my partner in crime, Dr. Karen McLean in computing science, typically robots have an interactive function so that if the individual who's using it interacts with it, the robot changes in some way to engage that human. The Calmer is a piece of equipment that is very low profile. When we were making Calmer, we wanted it to just blend into the beds that the babies are kept in. We didn't want it to have, we didn't want it to look like a human being in any way because we want families to take care of the babies along with the staff in the nursery and not a medical device. But there are certain circumstances when parents can't be available. And the purpose of Calmer is to reduce pain in babies who have to have procedures that might cause pain, for example, blood tests. And the babies in our unit are very ill, and the doctors and nurses and other staff need to know how the baby's bodies are doing and how their health is. And that's one part of the care that they have. And so typically we have the nurses or the families providing comfort to the babies, but there are times when the parents can't be there. And so the Calmer is a flat device that sits directly on the bed surface, and it has an artificial skin surface, and then it has a vertical motion of about a centimeter, and it has a heartbeat sound. And so what we're trying to mimic is something that's called kangaroo care, where the mother or the father or other caregivers might hold an infant on their chest. And so what the baby is getting is a skin touch. They're hearing the heartbeat and they're feeling the breathing motion. And those are very effective ways of calming babies. And so what we took was those three aspects and built them into a platform that can fit into the specialized beds in the nursery.
That's pretty interesting to hear. We'll be right back here on Research Review after one short message, so please stay tuned.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
You are listening to Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM. So today we've been interviewing Dr. Lisa Holste, an associate professor in the Department of Occupational Science and Occupational Therapy at UBC. So far we've talked to Dr. Holste a bit about her educational and research path, how the Calmer medical device fits into the NICU environment, which is the neonatal intensive care. Girman, you had a question about the Calmer device.
Cool. Is this something that's usually used for like a few hours in the day, like before and after like blood draws and stuff like that? Or is it sort of used like in a replacement for a mattress, like all day, every day?
Great question. We have done two prototypes. So we've done three prototypes, but the first two prototypes that we built were to be put into the bed for very short periods of time, because we wanted to see whether or not it actually did help with the pain reduction in the babies before we put it into the nursery for longer periods. And we have learned through clinical studies now that the Calmer does help reduce the pain that babies feel. And so we're now at a stage with the third prototype where we want to do research where we're having the Calmer units in the baby's beds for longer periods of time. So we have to do this in a staged way because we don't want to implement another piece of technology into this high-tech environment if it isn't going to work. So we're at the stage now where we're wanting to test it over a number of hours to see how well the babies do on it and how it works with the nursing staff and the other clinical staff. So the staff themselves will have control over how long they want the commerce to be on. And we have a minimum hour we're going to set for that, but the staff will have control of it. And really it's to be used when the families are not there holding the babies themselves.
Okay, yeah. You mentioned a few of the benefits. Could you maybe elaborate a bit on how it helps with pain relief?
Sure. Well, how you measure pain in babies is a little bit complicated from the first place, because of course they can't tell you, they can't say, hello, you're sticking a needle in me and this hurts. So we have to use what are called proxy measures. So ways of inferring that the baby's having pain, because we know that the procedure they're having breaks the skin, for example, so for a blood test. And then we measure how the baby's behavior changes. So we look at how their facial reactions change. We look at their body actions. And we also measure biological signals, such as their heart rate and their brain oxygenation. And what we have discovered is that if you use the Calmer during a blood test, that the babies stay more stable. So they have lower facial changes, they have better brain oxygenation, and their heart rates stay lower. And it works no differently from a NICU staff person putting their hands around a baby to try to kind of comfort them. So we're not trying to show that Calmer is better than parents. That's not a comparison that we make. What we're trying to do is compare it to something that would happen if a parent weren't there.
The question I had is that this device, the Calmer device, which locations has this been implemented in so far?
Well, so far we've had it only at the BC Women's Hospital. The latest round of prototypes that we've made, we've always had just one prototype. Because it's fairly expensive to have these things built. And in the last round of funding, we were graciously given an award from the BC Women's Hospital Foundation from donors to build four units. And we're still going to just implement them at the BC Women's Hospital for this round, because again, we're doing a staged approach where we want to see, can this really work over a number of hours? How do parents feel about it being there? How do the babies react if they're on it for a number of hours, over a number of weeks? And once we have the results from that work, then we'll be able to have units farmed out to other places in Canada. And I have collaborators at other hospitals, for example, in Montreal, who would be very interested in trying this out in their unit. But it needs to be done in a research context first before it is made available to the general public.
But you do anticipate, based upon what you've seen so far, that one day this could become something that is fairly widespread, even outside of Canada. Is that possible, you think?
Yeah, so my goal is any baby in the world who wants one can have one, or needs one can have one. And one of the, this has been such a wonderful part of my academic career, is that the people who I've been able to work with have just been fabulous. And I was on a call this morning with some students from Cornell University who reached out to me a year ago, looking for a project to do in one of their engineering courses. And what we arranged was that they would help us redesign the commer so that it could be used in low and middle income countries. And so we have to think about variable power sources, and there are lots of other considerations we have to think about if we want to have this available for countries who are lower resourced than the BC Women's Hospital in Vancouver, Canada. And so I've been working with a team of students at Cornell for a year now, and in fact have a group of six students who are volunteering over their summer now to help continue redesigning it for other purposes. So it's been a lot of fun, and we're thinking about how this could be used in different contexts.
That's pretty interesting, because you mentioned, for example, one of the things could be the fluctuations in power source. What are some other limitations that you believe you see right now, and some of the things that you might be working on potentially improving to basically make the Calmer robot something that could be used more on a widespread basis?
Well, we have to think about things like, and we need to think about this in Vancouver as well, but it's even more critical in places where people might be moving the equipment more regularly. So it might need to be lighter weight. The materials that we would use would need to be very readily available in the country where it's being used. We want to avoid it breaking down and ending up in the technology graveyard that often occurs. We need to think about what kind of standards it's built to, because many countries don't have the same technology development standards that we do here in Canada. For example, we built the Calmer for the BC Women's Hospital so that it would pass the Canadian Safety Association standards. And in Malawi, for example, which is one of the countries where we're working, they have different standards. They use the WHO, the World Health Organization standards, and those are quite different. So how you actually produce it and what kind of risk management and design questions you ask change depending on where you're building it for.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Has the Calmer robot been used on procedures that are maybe like a step up from a blood draw? So maybe something that would be used in tandem with a bit of sedation, like a spinal tap or a central line insertion or something along that realm?
Great question. Not yet, because when we were looking to see whether it reduced pain, we wanted to use a uniform kind of procedure that is done regularly. And the one that's done the most is blood draws. So we haven't tested it out yet to see how it would impact babies if they're getting lumbar punctures or spinal taps that you mentioned. We have another procedure we might test it out is when doctors are checking the vision of babies and they have to dilate the pupils and they have to hold the eye open really wide, and the baby, it's not painful, but it makes the babies quite upset. They get irritated because they're held down and sort of have a bright light shone in their face. So there are a number of ways we could branch out. The other group of infants who I think would be quite interesting to test on are babies who are born from mothers who have had opiate addiction, and the babies are actually going through withdrawal. And they tend to get quite irritable and sweaty, and they don't feed very well. And so calmer may be of some benefit to that particular population as well. Again, we haven't tested that yet, but that would certainly be a group of infants who we'd be interested in studying.
Yeah, isn't there the Shiwei Hospital in Vancouver that does a lot of work with that? Have you maybe been in contact with them for any collaboration?
Yeah, not yet. It's not been a straight road getting calmer to where it is at the moment. And of course, most research isn't a straight road. But this really started 11 years ago, and there have been stops and starts along the way. And you know, getting funding for this kind of work is often challenging as well. So it's really, we've been working as fast as we can. And, you know, long after I'm gone and retired, there will be lots of work still to do. And in fact, a colleague of mine, Dr. Manon Ranger, who's in the School of Nursing here at UBC and an assistant professor, I am starting to mentor her so that she can continue on some of the work in calmer after I am sipping margaritas on the beach when I'm retired.
That's pretty good. We'll be right back here on Research Review after one short message.
FM Vancouver Reloaded, playing your favorite tunes and mouth-humping your ear holes full of voice talk. Yeah, we do that.
You are listening to Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM, and today we are interviewing Dr. Lisa Holstie. In the past, we've discussed a bit about the process of how the Calmer device was designed, developed, and tested, and what the future holds for this device, such as international deployment. Now, one question I have is that this Calmer robot you mentioned, it's designed mostly to be used in the neonatal intensive care unit setting, right? Are there other healthcare or medical settings that this could be used in? Or, you know, I'm just wondering here, could this be even used in a non-medical setting? Is there any use case potentially for that?
Sure. When I was first talking to the head of the e-entrepreneur program at UBC, he said that we were having a cup of tea, and he said, you know, you could just get a pediatrician to say this is a great thing, and you could sell it at Toys R Us when it was open. And I said, you know, that's not my style. I really need to make sure this works. Mm-hmm. But I think that of course there's a use case for healthy babies needing calming at home, and you could have single units for that. I also had a great conversation with one of the designers at BCIT, which is the unit who have built the prototypes, who thought that there might be a case for using it in veterinary medicine post-operatively, that you could have recovering animals be on the unit. And one of the aspects of calmer that I didn't mention is that the heart rate and the breathing rate are programmable. So we can set those to the parent specifically for each baby. It doesn't change when the baby's on it. So again, I'm referring back to the issue of it's being responsive in some way. It's not responding to the baby, but we can vary the rates of both the heart rate and the breathing rate so that if the baby were lying on the mother, we can then say, okay, what was her resting quiet heart rate and breathing rate? Let's now program the calmer to do the same.
And one question, because again, you mentioned the wider spread distribution of calmer, especially to developing countries where there might be like language barriers as well. I'm wondering, how difficult is it to use the calmer robot? Does this require any sort of special training? Do people need to be like certified healthcare professionals to use this, or is it relatively easy to use?
The way that it's designed now, it's only to be used obviously in research settings. Mm-hmm. It is controlled with a handheld pendant that's the size of your iPhone or Android phone. And literally you hit the start button and you hit up or down on the parameters, the breathing rate and the heart rate and the volume. And the volume of the heartbeat can only go so high because of obviously we don't want to have raves going on in the incubators. Really, it's three buttons and you're going.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to compliment the BCIT Research Engineering Unit, because the very first prototype was built by UBC mechanical engineering students for their capstone course. And they did an amazing job. They actually built a prototype we could take into the nursery, and we did a very small pilot study. And the thing was plastic and duct tape and springs, and it was amazing. It worked. And then after we got that version to work, we started working with BCIT, and they have built the prototype since then.
That's great.
Yeah, I know you've mentioned how neonates could respond to pain. Have you measured any other outcome measures when it comes to neonate response, like temperature, blood sugar, hormones, stuff like that?
I have in my other research. I've done research around stress hormones, so cortisol and ACTH. I haven't tested those with the calmer. We've tried to measure things that are really easy for the NICU staff, the things that they look at all the time. And those are really the heart rate and the breathing rate. The one other parameter that Dr. Ranger, who I mentioned earlier, is a specialist in, is the brain oxygenation and brain electrical signal. And we have done some work on the brain oxygenation measurements and the brain electrical signals. And we are going to continue that work going forward to see how the calmer might affect brain growth, brain maturation, how well the brain's, how the connections are working and developing. And also we're going to be looking at things like how well the baby is growing and feeding and things like that. So that kind of work is being done around the intervention when they have access to the calmer for longer periods of time. When it was during the pain, we were looking at very specific behaviors and biological signals.
Yeah, you probably didn't get a chance to measure this yet, but I know there are a lot of studies that look at skin-to-skin contact and how that helps with early breastfeeding. Do you think that's a possibility with the calmer robot as well, that it could help with that sort of thing?
I don't know. You're absolutely right. Skin-to-skin does help with that. And we can certainly measure how quickly the babies get on to breastfeeding. If they've had calmer and whether that's faster or not. But the real benefit here is to not have it interfering with the moms who want to do skin to skin. So I don't want to get too far down the road where we're replacing the parents. We are absolutely not trying to do that. But it's a great question, and it's easy for us to record that kind of information when we're doing research, the research studies.
Do you see any improvements in the near future to the calmer robot, things that could be added, like, for example, maybe like smell even?
Yeah, we can. You can do that without needing to change the robot itself. You can have, you can just put a little cloth that might have the mother's breast milk on it, for example, near the baby's face. And we know that that's very calming. I suppose at some point, if you wanted to have music, you could probably have that piped in as well. But at the moment, we're not at the stage where we can start looking at a bunch of add-ons, because we still don't really know if it works or not. And so for a longer term implementation. But once I'm going to be optimistic. It's been a good way to look at it so far. Once we have some solid information that it can be used in the NICU, that it doesn't interfere with the care that the staff need to have and the parents' contact with the infants, and that we're seeing some positive benefit from having it there for longer periods of time, that's then the time to say, all right, now how do we jazz up this model a little bit? What are some things that families might want? And it would definitely need to be done in consultation right from the beginning, from with the staff and the families.
Think you could add some LED light strips with changing colors?
Yeah, mood lighting for sure. fine dining while they're having their tube feed. Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting close to wrapping up here, but one broad question, last question I had is, do you see any other avenues in which robotics can play a role in the care of neonates and infants?
Wow, that's a great question, and I wish that Dr. McLean were here to answer that. I'm sure there are around guided procedures, for example. I know there's lots of robotics in operating rooms, and I think that neonatal surgery is a very, believe me, a fine, delicate art, given the size of the patients. So on the one hand, yes, and on the other hand, it's already such a high-tech environment that I'm a little hesitant because I want the human aspect of care to stay there and to be the power in the unit, not more machines. So while I'm here, happy to talk about calmer, I'm also very cognizant that I don't want it to become a factory. And I think the human baby interaction is a very powerful one and needs to be the primary thing here.
That's great. And you know, thanks for sharing your future outlooks on that. And definitely really enjoyed having you on the show today, being able to talk a little bit about the Calmer robot.
Well, thank you. It's been great. I am delighted to talk about it always. And I'm grateful for your work getting some word out on Calmer.
Excellent. This concludes our interview with Dr. Lisa Holstie, who was featured on Research Review today. We hope to see you again in 2 weeks when we feature Dr. Edward Slingerland, broadcasting on August 4th.